morning I'm going to be talking about the rapid cultivation of fire moss as a potential tool for burned area emergency response. So here we can see a mixed conifer forest. This is located in eastern Arizona in the White Mountains, which has just recently been devastated by a stand-replacing wildfire. But 2 years post-fire, in some areas we've seen massive amounts of moss growth on the landscape. You can see kind of the reddish green layer is moss covering, I would say, up to 75% of that area. My job and my research is really focusing on expanding that moss and its ability to stabilize soils in these burned landscapes. So let me introduce the species. There's three species, Funaria hygrometrica, Ceratodon purpureus, and Bryum argentium. And the literature on these mosses is quite small. The body of knowledge really is from a global perspective, which is interesting. We've seen mosses in Australia, the US, Europe, and we also had a graduate student working here at Northern Arizona University on these species. Most of these studies are actually natural surveys, just looking at the colonization, and nobody's really looked at the function of these mosses on burned landscapes. So a little bit more about each species. Funaria is an obligate ruderal species. It's found in our greenhouse. It's found in sidewalk cracks as well as burned areas. Bryum argentium is found in a wide range of ecosystems, drylands, disturbed areas, severely burned landscapes. It's actually a dominant species in riparian areas in Antarctica. And then Ceratodon purpureus is found in disturbed and undisturbed landscapes globally. It seems to be a little bit more of a late successional species compared to the other two. So yeah, there's a problem in the Southwest. Wildfires have been increasing in intensity and severity. And so here's a good example of that. Is anybody here from Rhode Island? Okay, good. This is about the size of Rhode Island, this wall of fire. And it's the soil severity is a really quite a high amount too. The red you can see on the right is high severity as remotely sensed. So fire is bad news for these landscapes. After fire, it can enhance flooding, soil erosion, as well as sedimentation. Actually, a recent study by the USGS and Flagstaff has quantified the potential increase for this erosion to occur, and it's supposed to occur, or it's supposed to increase quite drastically. Burned Area Emergency Response, or BEAR, is tasked with mitigating these erosions, and it can be really expensive. It can actually be multiple times the cost of suppressing fires to rehabilitate them, as in the case of the wall of fire. So I'm focusing on a subset of BEAR, which is hill slope treatments. They've historically been using seeding as well as mulching to stabilize soils, but we think moss could be a valuable tool to add to these treatments. So for some specific reasons that mosses have, they're desiccation tolerant, which means they can dry out completely and be stored in a dry state for long periods of time, remain viable. They're totipotent, which means they have a vegetative propagule, so they don't need seeds to be propagated on the landscape. They've been shown to increase infiltration in degraded landscapes, as well as reduce erosion rates. And then they've also been shown to facilitate vascular plants in degraded landscapes as well. So right now, we've been focusing on two driving questions for my research. Do mosses have restoration value? And can we grow these mosses for restoration use? So I'm going to dive into this first question. I looked at a natural survey of mosses across the landscape in northern Arizona. I examined four fires this summer and was looking at moss cover as well as soil properties associated with moss colonization. I was also looking at a gradient of time since fire because we're really interested in how quickly these mosses colonize the landscape. The cover values we saw were very wide with a few outliers. So it's a little hard to see in this photo, but underneath all the vascular plants is about 65% cover of mosses stabilizing these soils. So across all four of those fires, you can see the two outliers on top with really high cover, and then some fires had much more fire. The San Juan and the Wallow are in eastern Arizona in a more mesic condition. They seem to be colonizing at a higher rate up on the landscape. We also collected soil property data. So we used a paired moss and bare soil microsite method. So you can see on the right there, the green is a moss microsite next to a paired non-moss covered microsite. And here are the usual suspects that we used. We used a mini disc infiltrometer, a soil aggregate stability kit to measure aggregate stability. We also used a soil pocket penetrometer to look at compressional strength and a Torvein to look at shear strength. So here's some very preliminary results. We have just been able to work up this data, and on the left axis is the change in percent stability or shear strength when you compare a microsite across all plots and all microsites. So, the 200% change you're seeing in aggregate stability is between bare and moss microsites, which is a really exciting result. It's showing that, mosses are contributing greatly to soil aggregate stability, less so to shear strength, but still quite a positive result. We only had a few plots where the moss seemed to be not contributing to these soil stability. So, yeah, do mosses have restoration value? I think we can say yes, and we're really excited to dive deeper into this data and look at it more. So now I'm going to address the second question. Can we grow these mosses in the greenhouse? So I really wanted to look at a wide variety of different substrates to answer this question. We focused on the early cereal species, so Bryum argentum and Funaria hygrometrica. And then I used a constant water delivery method by wicking water up through the soil and the substrate, really. It's not technically soil. So I used a 4x2x4 full factorial experiment, and we added both species as well as a combination of those two species to see if they enhanced or inhibited each other's growth. I added 20% cover of moss initially, and that's what it looks like for Funaria, and then here is Bryum argentum. And then we used an organic substrate. It's really, we actually bought it at Home Depot. It's really mostly bark and some manure. And then we also used a sand substrate mixed with coconut core. And that was factored with soil amendments of burn material. We thought they might enhance moss growth. So we had ash, charcoal, combination of the two, as well as no amendment. And then I also added in a split plot design to see if maybe we could enhance growth or possibly allow for easier harvesting after we grew the mosses with this burlap on top, as you can see on the top there. So to dive right into the results, for Funaria, we saw really promising moss growth on the organic substrate. We got almost full cover after 9 weeks or 63 days on that organic substrate. The thing that really inhibited moss growth across all substrates was the addition of ash. So if we didn't have any ash, this is also a percent change in cover, you can see. So the y-axis is you know, the initial growth or the initial moss inoculation compared to the final growth rate. And then it was much the same for Brium or Gentium, which is really a great result, having both species growing well in the same treatment combinations. We had Brium growing much better in organic material than on the sand coconut core. And we had one little twist in the Brium story, which was that charcoal really seemed to enhance moss growth compared to no charcoal addition. So that was interesting. I'd like to look into that more. And then we also had a result of burlap really inhibiting moss growth. I think it was mostly due to the fact that there was a breakdown in the hydrologic connection between the substrate and the burlap. So you can see kind of in the middle, there's a lot of moss growing on that burlap, but then the burlap's actually lifted up above. So it's somewhat of an artifact of our watering method. Because we watered from underneath, there was really no water getting to all the burlap. And then we also saw competition between these two mosses. They're functionally quite different, the look of them and where they show up on the landscape, but they don't seem to like to grow in this greenhouse model system together very well. So yeah, that second question is, we can grow these mosses, which is a really exciting result as well. So to build on this success, I'm in my second year of my PhD, so I'm going to be looking more at taking these mosses that we are growing in the greenhouse, putting them out onto burn landscapes. In northern Arizona, the land managers have really embraced active fire management, so using wildfires for ecosystem benefit, and that inevitably ends up in small patches of high-severity fire. I'm planning on using those and distributing moss on the landscape to test its viability in a wildfire setting. And then I'm also really interested in moss's ability to ameliorate soil hydrophobicity and water repellency. That's just the functional changes that moss have, differences from vascular plants, I think are going to be valuable in terms of interacting with the soil surface in a much wider cover than a vascular plant could. So yeah, I'd like to thank all the technicians who helped out with this and all of my funders.
Thank you, Henry. Yeah, I love your third comment there about the hydrophobicity. My question was, before you put that up there, was have you noticed if there's any correlation to date for the colonization of these sites and the hydrophobicity that you incur with some soils out in the landscape? I mean, is there a propensity to colonize the hydrophobic soils at the surface, or do you know?
I don't know yet. I think I'm going to have to look at that experimentally because there could be some sort of correlation between the two, but I can't tell if the breakdown of the hydrophobic layer, the infiltration data seems to suggest that there's less hydrophobicity underneath the mosses, but that could just be correlation instead of, you know, causality.
Thank you very much. We move on to our next speaker.